Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, January 19th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, we've had a lot of politics. So here is what I want you to do. For the next hour, take your mind off politics, just for an hour, and think about that rattle you heard in the front end of your car. Maybe a little hesitation when you hit the gas. Today, we're going to obsess not about politics, but about your vehicle. And Gordon Fricke is here. He is owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon knows vehicles. If you have a question about your vehicle, or lawnmower, engine, whatever, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. It's a popular show. Get in line early. Gordon Fricke, we start after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair once a month, and today is that day. Gordon Fricke is back. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke in Hoosick Falls, New York. He's been in the automotive repair and service industry for over 30 years, and boy, he knows what he is talking about. If you have a question about your car or truck, 800-348-2551 is the number, 800-348-2551, or you can email the program. Keep them brief if you can. We'll try to get to as many emails as we can. Sometimes we run out of time, but we do that with the calls as well. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, and the number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back to the show.
Great, Ray. Thanks for having me.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, you too.
We're off to a flying start here today. Do you see the picture I put on the page for today's show?
Yeah, what a classic, huh? A Daimler Benz or Mercedes Benz?
I think it's a Daimler Mercedes.
1902?
I think so.
Wow.
I wonder how many miles a gallon you got out of that.
It's probably not as good as you think.
You think that was an electric car?
No, I doubt it. I bet it was just a big old gas engine.
I heard in the early days here that there were a lot of electric cars at the turn of the century.
Yes, electric cars are nothing new. They started out strong, and then the gas engine completely took over, and now they're trying to come back.
Were they lead acid batteries in those days?
I'm sure they were. I'm sure that's all the technology was available at that time.
You can get a powerful battery, lead acid battery.
Big, heavy, full of acid, just a big mess, really.
Especially if you get in a fender bender.
Exactly.
Not a good thing. Well, Gordon Fricke is our guest. The lines are already loading up, Gordon, so what do you say? You ready?
All right, let's see what they do.
Let's do this thing. Jeffy and Troy, you're first. Jeffy.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have a 2005 Ford F-350, and recently I've been towing some heavy equipment, like a skid steer. And I noticed that it seems underpowered, and it just occurred to me today that I think what's happening is that it's not kicking down, like going uphill, the transmission's not kicking down into a lower gear. I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on how I'd start troubleshooting this.
Sure. Gasoline engine or diesel?
Gas engine.
Gas engine. So, and it's an automatic, of course, because you mentioned it didn't seem to shift down. How many miles are on the truck, roughly?
Oh, it's probably only 90,000 miles, but they're hard-earned.
Yeah, yeah. Couple of things. Every now and then, and I had a F-250 a month or two ago, and it was a fleet truck. You know, a lot of people were driving it, and it was under severe... severely hard use. And the complaint was the truck has diminished in power. Push it to the floor, it just makes a lot of noise and doesn't really pull the load like it used to. And the thought was it doesn't seem to shift up and down the way it should. Make a long story short, and I'm not saying this is what's wrong with your truck, but this vehicle was developing a clogged exhaust. The catalytic converters were starting to get plugged. And they restrict the exhaust flow, leaving the engine, so it chokes the engine. Still runs smoothly. There's no spitting. There's no sputtering. A lot of times there's no check engine light, just bad power. So that is something to consider, but it requires some checking before you just randomly change those converters because they're very expensive. But condition of the air filter, letting enough air in, and then the exhaust system is letting enough air out, And other than that, to confirm that your transmission is reacting the way it should, downshifting when it should and upshifting when it should, would require maybe a transmission specialist or a tech to go for a ride with you and confirm whether or not it's shifting at the right times.
And how would you check that?
Uh-huh.
Well, you're going to look at your load, your RPMs, you know, how heavy the truck happens to be at that time.
Is there a tachometer on that truck?
Is there a tach on that, Jeff? There probably is.
I want to say there is.
I would imagine so, yeah. But those are some thoughts to go and diagnose it with.
Okay.
Okay. Is the fact that this has got locking hubs, four-wheel drive,
yep.
And often I find that someone has not unlocked the hubs, but they've taken that a four-wheel and they're still driving it.
Yeah.
Is that something that would affect this at all, or is that a kind of a different issue?
Very little drag with those hubs in or out. That's not going to give you a noticeable change in power, especially on an F-350. That's a heavy, powerful vehicle for the most part.
Okay, and is that really bad to be doing? Should I crack down on people not unlocking those hubs?
Well, over the long term, those drive axles or drive CV joints or U-joints are running all the time. It's probably a good idea to keep it unlocked most of the time. But I find on trucks where they're unlocked 99% of the time, when you do need them, then you run into problems with rusty universal joints, and you have a lot of trouble because they have not been exercised.
Yeah.
So they should go in and out throughout the year to keep them limber.
So a couple follow-ups on that call, and thank you, Jeffy, for the call. The catalytic converter, he's at 90,000 miles.
Yeah.
It's an 05.
Yep.
Is that a time-related replacement, or is that more mileage? In other words, 90,000 miles doesn't seem like a lot of miles.
No, it doesn't. And some vehicles never need catalytic converters. Others need them much sooner than that. They don't plug as much as they used to. That is kind of rare nowadays, but it still happens.
Mm.
The federal warranty on those is 8 years, 80,000. So he's beyond both of those with that vehicle.
And the other question was, if there's a tachometer present on the vehicle and you're not getting power, you should see the RPMs way high if you're not shifting, right?
Exactly. And the transmission reacts to the amount of power that the engine provides to it. So it's very often misconstrued that the transmission's got problems when it doesn't. It's reacting to an underpowered engine.
Interesting.
So you can't throw the transmission under the bus in all these cases. So it's got to be a little careful.
All right, let's go to Emily in Plainfield, Massachusetts. Emily, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So my question has to do with recommended time to change oil, because back in the days before synthetic oil, we used to do 3,000 miles. Now we have an old car, like a 2004 Subaru, and a new car, new-ish, I guess, not so new anymore, a 2010 Scion, and it uses synthetic oil. And I've heard everything from like 5 to 10, and then I thought I heard you say just stick with 3,000 miles. So I wanted to hear your take on, you know, we drive our cars into the ground. We get hundreds of thousands of miles on them, and I just wanted to hear your take on making them last and how often you should change the oil, even with synthetic.
Yes, great question, extremely important. So here's what's happening. Synthetic oils are definitely better. They can last longer. Car manufacturers have extended their oil change intervals, partly under a little bit of government pressure for throwing out the waste oil, keeping the environment cleaner. So the longer the oil stays in your engine, the less is going to get potentially lost or out into the atmosphere. But on the other hand, leaving that oil in that engine too long is creating tremendous problems that we're seeing on higher mileage cars. We're seeing a lot of sludging issues, plugging up of passages that have to do with things called variable camshaft timing. That turns on your check engine light. Mm. Now you can't pass the state inspection, and it's costing thousands of dollars to fix the car when it hits higher mileage.
Yeah.
So I revert back to what I looked up months and months ago. Porsche is a major engineering company, and they happen to build cars also. And
I noticed that.
Yeah. their stance is they recommend that the oil be changed in their vehicles, but between 3,000 and 5,000 miles. Yeah. However, their manuals will state that you can go much higher if you're driving under ideal conditions, because they're under the same pressure everybody else is to make the oil last longer.
Right.
So.
Well, I can see not wanting, you know, waste oil in the environment more than necessary, but I don't see throwing out a car that could have lasted longer as, like, the solution in a way.
Exactly.
Because there's all sorts of, you know, environmental problems with too many vehicles also. So
you said a mouthful. Yeah.
I'm hearing 3 to 5, so 5 is not too long with synthetic oil, so long as you don't let it run over that.
My recommendation is 3 to 5, unless you're doing a perfect commute. Let's say you drive on...
There's no such thing.
Well, ideal conditions, and maybe in a climate not like ours with all the seasonal changes and the idling and the cold weather, but...
No, I live on a dirt road in the Hilltowns. We're not ideally commuting here.
When I say 3 to 5, most people throw the dart in the middle and do 4.
Right.
And that's okay.
Okay.
Well, good luck.
My partner, who is a mechanic, but he's more a heavy equipment mechanic, he was erring on the side of longer, and he said, but, you know, we're wasting it, blah, blah, blah. And I was pushing for shorter. So I think I have some ammunition here.
Thank you
very much.
Yeah, absolutely. How many miles are on your car now?
Oh, geez. The Scion's still low. It's like... it's like in the 70, 80, somewhere in there.
It's a baby.
But the Subaru is getting, you know, it's like 170. But we've driven cars to almost 300,000 miles. Like, we take good care of them. And, like I said, we drive them until they die.
The key is good maintenance.
I want to see the Scion go a long way because it's a great car. So I want to err on the side of shorter than longer oil changes.
Cool. Emily, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency, using food scraps and yard waste to create nutrient-rich compost to help conserve water and control weeds. Compost available for purchase. UCRRA.org. The Lathrop Communities, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for over 25 years, independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley. Lathrop.kendall.org. Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. edith-hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. The Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, an undergraduate theater program in liberal arts with concentrations in design and technology, theater studies, and performance. newpaltz.edu/theatre. And Uncle Sam's All-American Chocolate Factory, offering over 100 chocolates, including truffles, sea-salted caramels, and butter crunch, located on Albany Street, Schenectady, and Newton Plaza, Loudonville. UncleSamsCandy.com.
Well, you know, the WAMC Fun Drive starts on Monday, February 6th at 6 a.m. with our old buddy Alan Chartok in the chair, and there's a way to shorten our fun drive. It's going on now at our website, WAMC.org. Just hit up the lockbox and make your pledge right there. And I think as of the beginning of this program, we were at 320,000 in the lockbox already. The goal is to hit 500,000. That's half of our fund drive before we start the fund drive. We have a little extra incentive for you. And this just began today. We're going to offer two new premiums, both with a First Amendment theme. We have a First Amendment T-shirt. It's a pale gray, 100% cotton T-shirt. Over the right breast, the shirt is imprinted with a small AMC logo, WAMC, that is. The front of the T-shirt contains the full language of the First Amendment, and you can specify the size. It's a $100 pledge, or you get yourself a WAMC First Amendment coffee mug with a $100 pledge. It's really nice. It says, First Amendment, now more than ever, WAMC on the other side. That's a $100 pledge. Or if you want to make a $150 pledge, we'll give you both of those. And those are brand new, and they will help us fill that lockbox. The fun drive starts February 6th. You can hit the lockbox at wamc.org. It's Vox Pop. It is, oh gosh, this is a fun program to do. Gordon Fricke is here. We talk automotive maintenance and repair every month or so, and the number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go to John in Burnt Hills. John, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hey, Ray. Hey, Gordon. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Hey, Gordon.
Yes.
I've got a 2012 Civic Si, and the emissions message came up on the dashboard recently. I brought it in, and it was diagnosed as an EVAP system maintenance issue. It's not, they tell me it's not serious. I don't really have to do anything right today. Is that something that I can do?
Well, that particular series of codes having to do with EVAP and emissions, some of them are very difficult to diagnose. There's a lot of troubleshooting, a lot of things to check. But the first and easiest and sometimes the most common is to look at your gas cap, look at the seal where it seals against the filler neck, and look at the condition of the filler neck to see if there's any rust or corrosion around that surface where the gas cap seal fits. And it has to be perfect. So if it's not perfect, grab like a Scotch Brite or a scouring pad from the kitchen and clean that filler neck area so it's nice and clean and shiny. Make sure the gas cap seal looks absolutely perfect. It's not cracked or distorted. If there's any question, replace the gas cap, preferably with an OE cap for that car.
OE meaning
from Honda in his case.
Okay.
And you can buy good aftermarket equipment. You can buy aftermarket gas caps, and they're perfectly fine. But it's always good to get the factory cap on there. And
no, I'll pay $1 million for the.
It won't be that
the
bad.
OE one.
But, and that's no, if you're suspicious of the gas cap. But and then we put a little bit of like silicone grease around that seal, just so it makes a perfect seal when the gas cap snaps shut, and that may solve your problem. If your code was for a very small leak, the gas cap and the seal and the filler neck is the very first place to start. So you could do all that yourself. Other than that, you're going to go way deeper, and you're going to be into 100 different things.
And a lot more money, man.
Very possibly.
A lot more money. All right, John, thanks a lot for the call. All right, what's the percentage of people you tell, all right, let's change the gas cap, and it actually works?
Well, you know, we clean a lot of those filler neck seals and clean the surface up and put some grease on the cap, and it solves a lot of the problems.
You're kidding me.
But it'll only do it on the code that indicates a very small leak, and that's tiny.
Okay.
So that's the first place to start.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to Dennis in Greenfield. Dennis, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Oh, hi there. Thank you. Great idea for a show, Ray. And hi, Gordon. I have a 2012 Toyota Prius and about 79,000 miles on. It's on a second set of tires, and we're hearing a thumping noise starting a couple months ago. It builds up with speed of the car. It goes from bum, 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 to thum, 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 thum. And it wouldn't go away. It was kind of loud, a little disconcerting. Also, some variable screeching that seemed to have to do with braking and in a turn, and I could hear it while I was turning. I didn't know what to do. My mechanic said it was a bearing, changed out one of the bearings, and it didn't change anything. And he said, well, it might be the other one. So I wanted a second opinion. I went to the dealer. They changed out the brake calipers. The brake calipers were getting sticking and getting rusty. So that did seem to help. It got rid of the screeching noises quite a bit. And the thumping didn't go away, and they said it was the tires and the wear bars are starting to show. It's gotten better, and I don't know why. Sometimes I hear it, but not very often anymore, I can't explain.
Yeah. Well, turn the radio up.
Yeah. That does work.
Yeah.
And the dealer said when you change the tires, that thumping noise will go away. And the other question I had, as an aside, was we have mice that like to live in our car a lot.
That's a second.
I had one crawl up on my shoulder once while I was driving.
Nice.
Mothballs seem to be the best way to keep them out.
All right.
Except mothballs in the winter can keep me out of the car, too.
You make a point. All right, these are two separate, well, maybe not.
Yes.
But let's start with the thump.
Yeah.
Sounds like a bearing to me.
Yeah, the thumping is... Here's the thing with noises like that, a rhythmic sound that increases and decreases with speed. Always be suspicious of tire noise. And tire noise can mimic bearing noise. And a lot of bearings get changed thinking it's the bearing, and sometimes it's really the tire.
Okay.
On front bearings, on a front-wheel drive car, I raise the car in the lift, I put a guy in the car, and we put it in gear and bring the wheels up to the speed that you're hearing the sound. And with a stethoscope,
okay,
I listen to each bearing. Now, that's listening to the bearings unloaded. No weight on them, no car, but
right,
it 90% of the time you'll hear the bad
bearings. Very interesting.
The rear ones, if the car's all-wheel drive, same deal. If it's not,
okay,
you got to try to spin the wheel. Another guy's got to spin the wheel and try to duplicate the sound.
Yeah.
But if your tires are close to the wear bars.
Getting close.
Then all tires, when they reach the end of their life, have gotten choppy and distorted, and the tread's not perfect like it was when it came out of the mold. So all tires get noisy when they age. So if you are ready for tires in any case,
pretty soon.
Yep. Get the tires, and if all the sounds are gone, you're home free.
Oh, there you go.
If the thumping is still there, it's time to get out the stethoscope and do a little more checking.
All right, Dennis, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. A couple of quick emails here, Gordon, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one comes from Francesca, who says, I have a Subaru Legacy 2004, purchased in 2003. Pretty decent condition, except for a few repairs. A check engine light related to cruise control, which doesn't work. Some rust on both sides. About 95,000 miles. The light in the dashboard is fading. Radio speakers all out, except one. Poured considerable money toward repair over the last 2 years, including replacement of the head gasket at the expense of not wanting a car payment. Worth it to trade for a new car now to get as much trade-in value as possible? I could handle a car payment, but wanted to wait a few months more. That's a tough question.
Yeah. Well, so it's an 04 car.
Yes,
so
indeed.
So we're 12 years old.
Yes.
We've got 90, 100,000 miles on it. She's invested a fair amount of money.
You won't get much for it anyway,
no,
right?
No, and the difference between what it's worth today and even 6 months from now is not going to be that drastic. I would say keep driving it. Don't panic and get into something else right this moment.
Yeah.
A lot of good stuff was just under the car. So
hey, you put all that money into the head gasket. You might as well drive it.
It would be nice to get some of that money back.
Let's go to one from Michael, who says, my 2006 Saab 9.3 vibrates intermittently when traveling at highway speeds between 50 and 80 miles per hour. I feel it in the steering wheel, and it feels very rough, but it's not only when I'm accelerating. It also happens when coasting. Does this sound like a wheel balance issue or something more?
Probably is wheel balance, because if it's drivetrain related, drive axles, most of the time when you take your foot off the gas and stop accelerating, the vibration leaves.
Yeah.
His vibration never goes away. It's probably wheel and slash tire related.
Okay, and yeah, this one is from Tom and Rhinebeck. I have a 2004 Ford Freestar with 210,000 miles on it. I'm planning to drive it to Florida in a few weeks. I recently tuned it up, had new brakes installed yesterday. Tires are in good shape. I'll change the oil before I go. What kind of things should I do, or what things should I bring for my journey? Maybe another car.
Engine, transmission? No. Not much. Bring your normal stuff that you'd have when you travel.
210,000 miles.
Yeah,
though.
It could be anything. You know, chances are he'll be fine.
AAA is good, right?
You have a membership of some sort. You know, AAA or one of those roadside.
Yeah.
It's always good to have jumper cables and some spare things in the car. But if he's had it thoroughly checked, that's all you can do.
Yeah.
Barring the unknown.
Yeah. There you go. And highway driving, theoretically, once you jump on 95, you get through Jersey and you're on 95, should be fairly light on a vehicle, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's straight, steady going. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right, let's go to Jim in North Pownell. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Gordon.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I've got a Ford F-150, 1998. It's got about 88,000 miles on it. It's in pretty good shape, but it is wearing the front tires on the outsides. And I was just wondering if that's most likely just an alignment problem, or if I'm going to be looking at ball joints or something like that.
Is this a four-wheel drive?
No, it's a two-wheel drive stripper. It's the absolute basic F-150.
Sure, yeah. More than likely, it is just an alignment situation. The miles aren't very high, even though you've got, you know, it's a 98 vehicle. Before an alignment happens, a pre-alignment check gets done. So the technician is going to be checking your tie rod ends, your ball joints, your wheel bearing play, tire pressure condition, all that. So if there is a bad steering and suspension component, they're going to look for it and find it then, because you can't do an accurate alignment with anything worn.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So I think you're on the right track there to have that done, and that's probably going to take care of it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Hey, Jim, thank you very much. Over to line six, and Javon and Hudson, you're on.
Yes, I'm taking my call.
Yeah, hey, can you, you're on speakerphone, right?
Yeah.
All right, so I tell you what, it's making a lot of noise, so why don't you ask a detailed question, and then we'll hang you up, and you can listen on the radio. Is that all right?
All right. Is it better now?
Yeah, much better. Go ahead.
Okay. My question is, I have a 2007 Hummer H3, and like 4 days ago, it when I stop and I take off, even when I'm putting it in gear, it will like jerk when I put it in gear, whether forward or reverse, and it make the check engine light come on. And then like when I keep going, like when I just get going, it will like jerk when it go into that gear. When it go into like maybe second gear, then it will run smooth after that. Could you tell me what that could be? If it's the transmission or the transport case or something like that?
Yeah. It definitely sounds like it is related to the transmission. Doesn't necessarily mean your transmission is completely failing, but the check engine light will come on for various transmission issues.
Over the other gate.
So I think you should, first of all, make sure that the transmission fluid is at the correct level and it's in good condition, and then get it diagnosed and see what the check engine light is all about.
So read the code.
Absolutely, because that code could very well be leading to the cause of that jerking of the vehicle, which may or may not be a transmission problem. But you should get it checked soon, because it sounds like it's giving you a fair amount of trouble, and things could get worse.
Okay. Yeah, because it the light didn't come on until when it started doing that. So I'm thinking it's, the light is because of the jerking why the light would come on.
Yeah, I think it is. So you should get it diagnosed sooner than later.
Yeah, listen to the vehicle. Save money that way. Let's go to Pat in Cedar Hill. Pat, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Yes, good afternoon. I'll give you as much information as I can without taking all day.
Okay.
A 96 Camry with a four-cylinder, 160,000 miles on it. I'm getting a code P1780, which says it's a neutral safety switch. The car runs fine as normal, except for I'm trying to get the light off for inspection. So I took the bait and changed the neutral safety switch, and after 60 miles, the code came back on. Do you have any ideas?
Do you have more than a code reader? Do you have a scan tool?
No, but it's in a shop right now, and that's all they're getting is P1780.
Yeah. What's a neutral safety switch, Gordon?
It prevents the engine from being started unless the gear selectors in park or neutral. Where years and years ago, I mean, probably the dawn of the automatic, I don't know if that was in there, but
so this is only for automatics.
It's only for on manual transmission vehicles, it's called a clutch safety switch.
Right, you have
same
to have
type
the clutch
thing
in to start the vehicle.
So what I would do with that car is hook a scan tool to the computer and watch what the transmission module is seeing, and you put it through all the gears and see if it's recognizing every gear position. And if it thinks that it's not in park or neutral, let me ask you this. Have you ever tried to start it in any position other than park or neutral?
No.
It'd be an interesting experiment.
Doesn't just sound very safe. What, started it in drive?
Try it. Foot on the brake, just to see if there's really an issue. You changed the switch and it didn't make any difference to the code you're receiving, but there could be a problem with wiring, bad connections, other than the actual neutral safety switch, which you changed. I have seen those switches fail in that series Camry, but obviously you got to go a little deeper now, and it could be a wiring problem, which that really conjures up lots of time and troubleshooting and hair pulling.
Yeah.
But they're going to have to take it step by step and see what they can find.
So in other words, the switch was may have been fine, but it wasn't getting electricity and not functioning in any way.
Somehow the computer thinks there's a problem with the so-called neutral safety switch.
Is there a sensor for that?
Well, it's actually, you could call it a sensor, yes, because it's watching every position that you are requesting with the shift lever. Hmm. So when you put it in reverse, the transmission module, the computer says, okay, we looks like we want to go backwards. So it gives it the reverse signals. So there's a lot of stuff that happens nowadays.
Yeah, could that be have anything to do with the ECU or ECM?
It's possible. I usually don't find big ECU problems with cars, but there is that potential.
So the ECM is electronic
control module? Yes.
And what's the U stand for? ECU.
Electronic control unit.
Okay, same thing.
They give them different terms depending on the car manufacturer.
Okay.
Yeah. So unfortunately, it's got to get some troubleshooting, and hopefully
right.
they can nail it down and get the light off to satisfy the inspection.
When's the inspection due,
Yeah,
Pat?
It was more a shot that I was hoping something you had come across in your 30 years.
Yeah. I have run into that, certainly, but not, I can't tell you exactly on that car this is what you're going to find.
All right. Thank you.
You know, I had a vehicle at one point that had a lot of corrosion when I got it and had all sorts of problems with lights, and it turned out to be just a lot of corroded wires. They had to be cleaned up
yeah.
or replaced.
Yeah, and luckily you were able, you located the source of that, because if they're buried in the harness somewhere or some crazy connector that's under the carpets, for example,
yep.
you could spend days finding it.
Absolutely. Over to, who's been waiting longest? Dan in Schenectady. Dan, you're on. Oh, hey, Dan, can you hang in there?
Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Dan, can you hang in there? We got to take a break here. I didn't realize we're at the 240 spot. You want to hang on hold?
Oh, absolutely. No problem, guys.
All right, thanks a lot. We'll take a break here really quickly. It is Vox Pop, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from the University at Albany Theater Program, working to train the next generation of performers, designers, technicians, playwrights, and stage managers. albany.edu/theatre. Preservation League of New York State, offering EPIP, a revolving loan program to acquire, stabilize, and restore historic buildings in New York. PreserveNYS.org. Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. Edgar Bosick, Certified Financial Planner, Private Financial Design, South Hadley. Your life, your plan, your portfolio. PrivateFinancialDesign.com. Securities through Cambridge Investment Research, member FINRA and SIPC. And Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass. European cuisine infused with flavors of the world, Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork. VivaFreshPasta.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC. And just a quick reminder, the lockbox is open, WAMC.org. Fill it on up, and we'll shorten the fund drive, WAMC.org. Gordon Fricke is our guest, Ray Graff here, and Dan in Schenectady was on hold. Danny, you still there?
I am. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure thing. Your go.
I got a 2006 Subaru Legacy 2.5i basic model, and got 144,000 miles on it, but the check engine light is on, and that disables the cruise control to get your attention.
Yes.
I've got a code. I got a basic code reader. It's actually a Bluetooth one, hooks to the phone, and I've got a code 2097, bank 1, fuel sensor 2, O2 sensor 2 is in a rich condition.
Okay.
So what I've done so far is I took out the air cleaner, which is washable, and cleaned it all up and put it back. And I also took out the mass airflow sensor and cleaned it up and put it all back. And reset the code, went for a drive, and it came back on again. Same code.
So tell me which sensor it was in question again. Bank?
So it's bank 1. I only think it has one bank. and sensor two.
Yeah,
downstream.
I think there's only two sensors on that car total. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes, yeah. Yeah, so it's the one that's after the catalytic converter saying too rich.
Yes. Okay.
I'm not getting any reading for the one in front of the catalytic converter. It says no data, which I don't know if that's my cheap tool or
no. The one in front.
Something else.
Yeah, the first sensor in that system became an air fuel ratio sensor, and you can't read them like you could read oxygen sensors. So that's why you're probably getting that reading. It's not uncommon for that second sensor to need replacement. It's not uncommon for both of them to need replacement. If you don't have scan capability, it's just a code reader, you're going to have to gamble and just change the sensor and see if that solves it.
Yeah, I do see, I can see the voltage on the second sensor. It goes up to about 0.9 and stays there. You know, of course, as you give it gas or take your foot off the gas, it goes back down to zero. But I don't know how to read that properly.
Yeah, well, the higher the voltage, the richer the condition. The oxygen sensor is determining that the engine's running too rich. That's what that 0.9
too
is.
Too rich in oxygen?
No, too much fuel.
So not enough oxygen.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
So the downside.
Will that burn up my catalytic converter if I leave it like that?
Yeah, if it is really running too rich, it's going to be very tough on the converter. But the sensor could just be going haywire and giving the computer the wrong information, and it's maybe truly not running too rich.
Is that an expensive fix?
Not the rear O2 sensor is not that expensive on that car.
Okay.
And because you don't have the capability to scan and test and read the front sensor and the back sensor, it's not that expensive to replace it. It's got enough miles on it where you're not wasting your money. I think you should try it, and if it solves your problem.
So you would start with the rear sensor, not the front one?
Well, you've got, your code is indicating that the rear one is maxed out rich. But
yeah,
if you're not getting a rich condition other than that one sensor, it may be that sensor is just having trouble sending the correct information to the computer. The front sensor is the one that does all of the trimming and tells the computer to make it go richer, make it go leaner. But that one, you read that totally differently. So you're just not going to be able to do that. So if you're looking for best guess, which I hate to do, but it could be that back sensor has just gone askew. You may change it and find that didn't help anything.
Wouldn't it be better and wiser just to take it into a place that can do the full scan?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay.
But I think if he's looking to try to nail it himself and he wants to gamble a little bit of money, try it.
Okay. Over to Joanne in Bloomville. Joanne, you're on.
Hi. I have a 2010 Subaru Legacy wagon. It's or Outback wagon. It's a 6-speed manual transmission. And sometimes when I start it, it makes a whooshing sound when it first starts. And it won't do it for my mechanic.
Ah.
But it will do it for me.
It's scared of him.
Yep.
I think. But it almost sounds like something is opening up too much, or it's almost like a sneeze, like whoosh. It's not normal.
And are you hearing this from the engine? Is it from under the hood or out the
under
tailpipe?
The hood.
It is under the hood.
Yep.
It only does it cold start if it sits all night?
You know, it doesn't matter.
So
it's random.
Can do it any time.
Right.
Yeah. That's a very difficult thing to pinpoint, an intermittent noise, unless we find something that's very, very worn that could answer it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he's checked all the basic things. I have a feeling if he's determined that you're safe and nothing is ready to fall off, it may be a situation that has to go longer before it's more prevalent to pinpoint and diagnose. I can't say that is a sound that I'm familiar with that it always leads to a certain component.
Okay.
You know, it's not a super common complaint on those cars.
Well, good luck, Joanne. Thanks for the call.
All right.
Bye now.
Thanks.
All right, here's a weird one. Maybe it ties in with that. This is an email that came in from Chris in Cornwall on Hudson. I have a 2004 Mini Cooper. Am I crazy, or is it possible to hear a water pump that is failing? I hear a continuous whooshing windmill sound that is exactly like the sound my former car made just before the water pump abruptly failed on the New York State Thruway. Is that something that the dealer can diagnose? That's from Chris.
Well, water pumps, when their bearings start to fail, will get very noisy. Mm-hmm. And it is easy to diagnose if it's that far along in its failure. With a stethoscope, I use this thing all the time because
really?
You can. It has a point on it. And you can put the point on various components, and it'll amplify the sound like crazy. So if one turning component is ready to go or failing, and you probe around, you'll get back to that one. It'll be really loud, and the other ones won't be.
Yeah.
So, yes, those things can be definitely checked ahead of time.
What about by ear? Assuming Chris in Cornwall on Hudson does not have a stethoscope, is he hearing that? Could it be the water pump?
It could be the water pump, but it could be any other turning pulley on the engine as well. It could be the alternator pulley, the belt tensioner pulley. By the way, on Mini Coopers, we have replaced a handful of automatic belt tensioners because there's, I believe, two pulleys involved on that unit, an idler and the one that keeps the belt tight. And they can definitely cause trouble.
Okay, but no recall on that?
No, not that I'm aware of.
All right, let's go to Steve in Schenectady. Steve.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. Hi. I have a 2003 Subaru, and I think the brakes are telling me that they need work. And I don't plan on keeping the car, for very much longer. I don't want to spend a lot of money on a brake job. I'm wondering, are there kind of like, it has the ABS brake system? I'm not familiar with that. I mean, it used to be just change brake pads, but what can I do to keep my cost down on a repair?
Sure. Right. What are your symptoms? Are you getting a heavy pulsing pedal?
I'm getting squeaking, particularly in reverse, and I also I can hear the front a grind in the front, you know?
Yeah.
When I come to a stop.
Yep. Well, here's what's
I'll even kind of, like slide a little bit sometimes.
Yeah. Here's the trend of the last probably 10 years at least.
Yeah.
Brake rotors or discs, which all cars have on the front, most have on the rear, the discs or the rotors have gotten quite thin by manufacturer to make them lighter, less expensive. When the pads are completely worn out, the rotors are usually also too thin.
Yeah.
Or very rusty or scored or warped, and they just need to be replaced. You can't save brake rotors anymore to speak of, unless it's a truck and they're big and heavy and machinable. So it has become such a routine thing to do pads and rotors as a set, and you just throw them away. The rotors are so rusty and so beat up and so warped, it's not practical or wise to just put pads on rotten rotors.
And the roads in the wintertime are so full of salt.
Yes.
I've been through so many rotors on our minivan, our family minivan.
It's due to corrosion from the road salts and all the spray, particularly the back wheels, because they get blasted worse than the fronts from all the road spray.
All right, let's go over to Gary in Belchertown. Gary, you're on.
Hey, boys. You had alluded to the perfect commute earlier in the conversation, and I have a Chevy Silverado with 213,000 miles on it. So the 13, I drive a lot, and I was wondering what you consider the perfect commute.
Well, not a lot of starting and idling. So start the engine up, go in the house, have breakfast. Half hour later, you go leave. That's not good for the engine or the car. It's nice because it's beautiful, nice heat when you get out there. But so not a ton of idling. A lot of steady speed driving is considered very good. Let's say you have a job that is an hour away and you're on good roads.
Yeah.
You start it up, you reasonably let it warm up, and you do your commute. You get to work, you shut it off. It sits there till lunchtime or the end of the day. You start it up and do the same thing. You're not doing a trillion stop and goes. You're not doing a million parallel parking maneuvers or picking up people, dropping people off.
Right.
Sitting outside waiting with the engine running for hours at a time. That's all bad.
Okay.
So that's kind of sums it up.
So do you have a perfect commute?
I'm still doing the 10,000 miles on the oil change. Is that with the best synthetic, it says 12,000, 12 to 15.
Yeah, it's too much, because the reason I keep saying that is we see vehicles when they're at higher mileages and a little bit older, and we see the what happens when the oil stays in there too long,
yeah,
and there's too much bad driving, and we're seeing a lot of sludge and particle buildup internally that starts to plug up a lot of stuff. And those things don't occur till later in life. So the first owner might do those 10,000 mile oil changes, trade the car in at 75,000 miles, say, this is the best car I've ever owned.
You get it.
And 20,000 miles later, you're doing all the maintenance you can, and the shop says your variable cam timing is not working anymore.
Yeah.
And it's $1,800 to fix it or more.
Yep.
So okay, that's my stand on that.
All right, let's go to Michael in Sparrow Bush. Michael, you're on.
Hi, guys. Sounds like the Subaru hour.
Yeah.
Here. Gordon, I have a 2014 Subaru Forester. It's got about 26,000 miles on it. About 9 months ago, I started noticing really heavy idling when I would stop at a stoplight. I took it into the dealer, and they said they couldn't duplicate the problem. It was still going on. I took it back again a week ago. They say there's nothing wrong. But it wasn't doing this when I first got the car. I'm wondering if you have any idea what could be causing that, or if it's something I should be worrying about.
Okay.
What are you feeling? Is it a vibration or a noise? Do you feel it?
I feel a vibration. It's almost, there are times that it is almost as if I'm sitting in one of those massage chairs.
Yeah.
Oh, how nice.
So if you took it out of gear and put it in neutral or park, does that stop that entirely? Have you tried that?
I haven't tried that.
Come to a stop when you're feeling the vibration. Take it out of gear and just see if it completely stops.
Hmm.
And that really isn't going to pinpoint what's going on, but it's going to take the load off of the engine. And you can then increase the engine speed and slow it down with the gas pedal. See if you can bring that vibration into the picture. Something may be slightly out of balance. The idle speed is controlled by the onboard computer, so you can't turn any screws or make any adjustments to it. So you have to see what's causing it, if it's a weak engine mount, if it's an exhaust vibration that you're feeling and hearing, which is common on Subarus, but it has to be replicated, and somebody's got to be in there and experience it and say, yeah, I do feel it. This is what we can check, but nothing specifically comes to mind on that car.
All right, Ron in Albany, very quickly. Ron, you're on.
Hello. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep.
Hello, yeah. I got squeaky brakes, and I'm wondering if I should look at the rotors or not.
How many miles are on the car?
About 70,000. I just had new brake pads put on with new rotors about a year ago.
It's hard to tell sometimes if the squeak is coming from the front or the rear.
It's coming from the front.
Is it?
It's definitely,
yeah,
the brakes.
Yep. Quality and brand of the brake pad is important. Just about all your better brake pads have shims built into the back. We use a...
Well, they're probably cheap brake pads. I got them at Mavis, and it was a discount.
Killing
and
me.
Free brake pads forever.
Our legal department denies what you just said, but anyway, go ahead.
So if that's the case, I would revisit them and just see if there's anything they can do to help you with it. And it could be that the batch of material was not very good that month,
yeah,
wherever they got them.
Would you blame it on the brakes or the rotors?
Well, they have to be looked at, because if it was only... How is it? An old year-ago brake job?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A year ago.
Somebody's got to put their eyes on it, see how everything is wearing, make sure all the surfaces look good. You might,
yeah,
have a crooked brake pad. You may have some hardware issues. So I think they should take a peek at it.
All right, this one dovetails in the waning moment here. An email from Ryan. I have a Kia Forte that just turned 100,000 miles. A few mornings ago, I started it and let out a new squeaking sound that coincided with the engine idle. As I revved the engine, the squeaking went away. It sounded like it was coming from beneath the car. I drove to town about 10 minutes away, and it stopped. It was a wet morning, but not cold. It hasn't happened again. Ideas on what it may have been?
I would think probably a belt issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. The belt's probably old, may not be original, but dampness affects sounds of belts. So I'd be looking at the drive belt.
And then here's a question that he tacks on. How hard is it to change a rear brake caliper? I suppose it depends on who you are.
Well, let's see.
One, very hard for me.
1 to 5, and right, depends on who you are.
Right.
So that's a good question.
Okay. Well, so that's it, Gordon. We're just about done. You know, the lockbox, we're at 322, almost 323 now.
That's not bad. We got, what, 2 weeks to go still?
2 weeks to go from Monday from the fund drive.
Yeah.
So I hope we can do this.
I think you'll hit the 500.
If we get done early enough, maybe we do a car show, right?
Call me in.
Will you be on call?
Absolutely.
Thanks, Gordon Fricke. Support comes from the Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter scratch bakery, caterer and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalley.coop. Gloriosa and Company, Ashfield, Massachusetts, preparing weddings, showers, reunions, and more at the Curtis House with 3 B&B rooms available or at their recently renovated barn, Farm to Vase Florals, information at gloriosaco.com. And Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road Colony, locally owned seafood restaurant at Raw Bar, realseafoodco.com. Well, thanks again to Gordon Fricke for being here today. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks for all the great calls and the emails. And, you know, thanks to Zach Malloy, who drives the show over there in the control room. Thanks to Deb Malik, who took your calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. No Food Friday tomorrow. There's an inauguration of some kind. We'll be doing coverage all day long, starting at 10 a.m. Have yourself a lovely weekend. Have yourself a merry little Christmas and enjoy the inauguration. We'll see you tomorrow.